Welcome to the 42nd episode of Egg Timer Philosophy, a podcast where philosophical ideas are scrambled up in about 5 minutes. Today we'll be taking a look at James Rachel's 1975 influential essay about euthanasia entitled Active and Passive Euthanasia, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. The paper is an extremely accessible and very short read. It's only about 3 pages long in the original publication, and PDF reproductions that you can find with a quick Google search are only about 6 pages long. If you find that you have a lot of interest in this topic, you can find a full-length book that Rachel's wrote on the topic. Rachel's essay suggests that the medical community, particularly in the United States, has made a serious error in how it treats the difference between active and passive euthanasia. So just by way of definition, active euthanasia is when someone takes direct action to end the life of another who is suffering. An example of this might be a patient who is terminally ill and is given a lethal dose of a sedative. Active euthanasia involves killing. Passive euthanasia, on the other hand, occurs when someone withholds medical care or something such as nutrition or water to end the life of another who is suffering. An example of this might be when a feeding tube is removed from a patient, or it could involve not resuscitating a patient who has a do not resuscitate order. Passive euthanasia involves letting die. Now, matters of euthanasia are handled very differently in various legal systems and societies around the world, and there's no global standard on this very difficult issue. Rachel's focus is specifically with how the issue is treated in the United States, but what he says can be applied in a more global way. Within the law and medical community within the United States, there is often a great deal of emphasis placed on the difference between active and passive euthanasia. The standard treatment, and reinforced by the American Medical Association, is that active euthanasia is not allowable, while passive euthanasia is allowable under certain circumstances. The idea being that physicians and others may never engage in a killing, but there are times when they can let a patient die. Rachel sees a glaring flaw with this position. He challenges the sharp moral distinction between killing and letting die. He maintains that there are clear cases where letting a person die are every bit as bad as killing the person. In his essay, he offers the example of a person who is second in line to a big inheritance. So the person decides to kill the person first in line. And he's up on his way to the bathroom where the person first in line is taking a bath. And the plan is to drown that person so the full inheritance can be had. But just as that evildoer reaches the bathroom, he hears a thud and sees that the person he had intended on killing has taken a fall and needs immediate medical attention. The person who is doing this evil plan, he does nothing, and he watches and lets the other person die. Rachel concludes correctly, I think, that in such a case, letting the person die was every bit as bad as killing the individual. And as such, the distinction between killing and letting die fails to do the moral work many who make the distinction between active and passive euthanasia suggests that it does. Consider another example here directly within the medical community. Imagine a nurse is watching over a patient who is the worst imaginable patient ever. The nurse is at his wit's end, but would never smother the patient in his sleep. Instead, the nurse decides to take a smoke break and forget to give the patient necessary medicine that he needs in order to live. In that case, the nurse has let the patient die. But what he did was clearly morally equivalent to killing the patient. Again, the distinction that suggests that killing will always somehow be worse than letting die just doesn't hold up. Now, there is no doubt that there are going to be cases where killing is morally worse than letting die, But this won't always be the case. And since it isn't always the case, Rachel forces us to question whether a medical community that strictly forbids active euthanasia while having a more permissive attitude towards passive euthanasia is acting correctly. It's also important to note here that if an emphasis is placed on the pain of a patient who is, say, terminally ill and suffering greatly, it also makes little sense to draw a clear line between active and passive euthanasia. In many cases, active euthanasia involves little pain or no pain at all, while passive euthanasia can involve a greater deal of pain for the patient. Further, at least in his essay, Rachels is not endorsing either active or passive euthanasia. Instead, his position is that if you're going to allow for euthanasia, in at least some cases, drawing a distinction between active and passive euthanasia is neither rational nor morally defensible. Rachel's essay compels us to see that sometimes the distinctions that are drawn regarding extremely important ethical issues that can impact all of our lives are based upon tradition and evade rational defense. Until next time on Egg Timer Philosophy, wishing you good philosophical vibes.